It's Weekends and All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. And for our cover story today, a question. Can working moms make it to the top? And we came to this story in a roundabout sort of way because it started with talk about the next defense secretary. President Obama is expected to make that announcement in the coming weeks. And in recent days, there's been a lot of speculation over whether that job could go to former Senator Chuck Hagel, or even possibly to Michelle Flournoy, formerly the highest-ranking woman in the Pentagon. Now, last year, Michelle Flournoy stunned her colleagues when she stepped down from her job as Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. Flournoy is a mother of three, and she said she needed to spend more time with them. And when we spoke with her about it recently, she described what her life was like.
I usually got to work between 7 and 7:30 in the morning, and would pretty much go nonstop until about 7:30 at night, and then I would take a break for an hour and a half or two, on a good day, have a little time at home with my family, put my kids to bed or help them with homework, and then by about 9 o'clock, be available again to start working, either by phone or fax or just doing paperwork.
You did this for 3 years. At what point did you realize it was really taking a toll?
You know, I think for our family, the added complication is that both my husband and I were in senior government positions at the same time. He's the deputy secretary at the VA. And so we were really asking a lot of our kids during that three-year period to have both of us working flat out. And while I don't think our family would trade it for the world in terms of the opportunity to serve this president, there was a point in time when my older kids were reaching the teenage years that they really needed more of a parent. And so my husband and I had a number of long discussions and decided that it was time for one of us to step out.
We'll hear more from Michelle Flournoy in a moment. Her decision resonated with women around the country, and it prompted a new national discussion about whether mothers can reach the highest levels of corporate America as easily as men. We asked Katie Jacob Stanton, a top executive at Twitter and a mother of three as well, about balancing motherhood with career.
Last night I got home from work a little bit late. We've had a really intense week at Twitter, which is great and it's thrilling, but it's meant that I've come home from work late every night. And last night I got back and my daughter said, well, Mom, I owe 3 dozen cookies, homemade, and they have to be homemade, and we need to bring them in tomorrow. And it was about 8:30 p.m. I thought, oh, my God, I felt so bad. And, you know, there's nothing that a quick batch of Toll House can't solve. So that seemed to work out okay. So you have to take, you know, each day in stride and enjoy what you have.
2 years ago, Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, gave a TED Talk where she described how previous generations of women blazed a trail for people like her. But at the same time, Sandberg described a problem.
And the problem is this. Women are not making it to the top of any profession anywhere in the world. The numbers tell the story quite clearly. 190 heads of state, 9 are women. Of all the people in parliament in the world, 13% are women. In the corporate sector, women at the top, C-level jobs, board seats, tops out at 15, 16%. The numbers have not moved since 2002 and are going in the wrong direction.
Sandberg's message to working mothers was this: don't take your foot off the gas pedal. But for many working mothers, it's not so simple, and Sandberg acknowledged that in her talk. For Michelle Flournoy, the decision to leave the Pentagon was agonizing.
I did agonize over the decision for a number of reasons, including the sense of not wanting to let down the side. But what's interesting is since I've made the decision to step out for a while, I've had a number of young women come up to me and actually say, thank you. Thank you for making it okay to have periods in your career where you do rebalance in favor of family, and for demonstrating that you can do that and still, over the arc of a career, continue to progress and to continue to have opportunities to, you know, serve and contribute. So I was actually surprised by the reaction because I had worried about, you know, the letting down the side, if you will.
Is it possible to attain the highest levels in government or corporations or academia or wherever and still be a mom, a working mom?
I think you can. I just think you have to, there's a sequencing. I mean, I'm one who believes that you can have it all, you just can't always have it at exactly the same time with equal intensity. My career has looked like a sine curve in terms of balancing and rebalancing. Different periods where I've had more intense career focus versus more of a family focus. And I think the issue is that that's not true for a lot of women, and we as a society haven't figured out how to adequately support women so that they can have periods of rebalancing and still continue to progress in their careers at a rate and at a level comparable to their male counterparts.
Do you think you are at a place in your life now, having taken this year away from government, where you could go back to that kind of demanding life again?
You know, I think we as a family are at a place where we realize with teenagers, one of us has to be out of government service. So I think if I were to go back in, one of us would have to be out. But I have certainly had a chance to recharge my batteries, and I am eager for public service in the future. That said, it would be very hard to miss these very precious years where I have the last years with my teenagers at home.
That's Michelle Flournoy. She was the highest-ranking woman at the Defense Department, where she served as Undersecretary for Defense Policy. A few weeks ago, Kay Heimowitz, a scholar with the Manhattan Institute, wrote an article for City Journal about this very dilemma. It's called The Plight of the Alpha Female, and in it, she cites some staggering statistics. Women now outnumber men in the American workforce, but at the top, the gender gap is huge. Only 4% of the CEOs at Fortune 500 companies are female. 20% of law school deans, even though most law students are women, and just a quarter of senior executives in corporate America. So despite the great efforts in both the public and private sector, why such a huge disparity at the top?
Well, there's one word, children. What happens is that women work fewer hours than men. They take off more time for maternity leave. They tend to also work, they're far more likely to work part-time than men are. And according to surveys, they seem to want it that way. Though we have to always make the caveat that, yes, there is discrimination. But the major factor in the gap, both the gender gap, wage gap, and the gap at the very top, the gap among the alpha females, is due to children.
It seems to me that that is a kind of a form of discrimination. I mean, if you have, as you write, many, many young women, when they're at the point in their careers where they're really going to get to the next level, it's usually around the same time when they decide to have children. So I wonder, I mean, why can't institutions and the corporate sector and other parts of America adapt to that and accept that there may be periods of time when those promising women will be out of work for some time, will be with their children, or they may scale back on their hours for a few years?
Well, I think that the corporate America and certainly the public sector also is trying to do that and has been somewhat successful. There's a very powerful movement towards flex time. I think the number is something like 77% of corporations are now offering flex time to at least some of their employees. But at a certain point, and this is particularly true at the top, the competition is so keen to get ahead that if you have a young baby at home and you're a woman or, for that matter, a man who wants to be quite involved with raising that baby, it's just a matter of physics. You cannot be doing both things.
It seems, though, that you're being penalized for that.
Well, it's a funny way of putting it in my mind to say that you're penalized because you have children. There's no question that we can do more to try to arrange the workplace around this problem. But I think your question, the way you're raising it, implies that there are no differences between men and women. They all want the same thing and want similar amounts of time with their children, similar things from the workplace. That may not be true. So I think the presumption that this is really what women want, they want this absolute parity with men in the workplace, it really remains to be proven. But the bottom line is this. Look, if you have company A and they can deliver a product faster, if they can meet with a client at any time of the day or night. Go travel anywhere in the world to have a meeting with that client. That's Company A is the one who's going to get the job. So should we change that? I don't see how you can.
Kay Heimowitz's article is called The Plight of the Alpha Female. It's in the latest issue of the City Journal. Kay, thank you.
Thank you.
Women in America earn roughly 77 cents for every dollar men earn. And while many industries in this country are increasingly being dominated by women, there is no evidence that things at the top are changing. It's a point that Sheryl Sandberg made in her TED Talk.
My generation, really sadly, is not going to change the numbers at the top. They're just not moving. We are not going to get to where 50% of the population. In my generation, there will not be 50% of people at the top of any industry. But I'm hopeful that future generations can. I think a world that was run where half of our countries and half of our companies were run by women would be a better world.
But what about women who aren't at the top? What are their options? We're going to continue our conversation in a moment. We'll hear from the former ambassador to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, who spent 3 years looking for ways to close the gender gap. Stay with us. It's All Things Considered from NPR News. It's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz, and we're continuing our cover story about working mothers and making it to the top. These are issues Karen Kornbluh knows well. For years, she's been studying and writing about trying to juggle it all, and she's been living it as well. In the 1990s, she rose to deputy chief of staff at the Treasury Department, but after the birth of her second child, she decided to quit. Kornbluh eventually went back to work and rose to become the U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And there, she launched a project to improve economic opportunities for women around the world. Earlier this year, she stepped down, in part to spend more time with her two teenage sons.
You're expected to give 100% on the home front and 100% at the work front and 100% into your friends and your community, and you feel like a complete failure. But I think here we haven't really adjusted to what I call the juggler family, the rise of the family where all adults are working, either it's a single parent working or two parents working. We still have this idea in our head that the ideal worker is the breadwinner with no family responsibilities, and the ideal parent is the homemaker with no workplace responsibilities. And we haven't changed our expectations enough.
As we heard earlier from Kay Heimowitz, her argument is that many women make this choice. They choose to spend time with their kids over pay, that the opportunities are there, there's flex time, there are all these, you know, corporations have adapted and the workplace has adapted, and many women just make this choice. Do you think that that's the case?
I wouldn't call it a choice in the classic sense because I don't think they have a lot of options. We don't have the option to work flexibly and not lose your health care in many cases. We don't have the option to work and have your children in a safe, high-quality childcare situation. Until we give families some real options, I don't want to blame or say there's no problem because women are making a choice when they're making a choice and they don't have serious options. And I think we can look to other countries to see what serious options look like, whether it's a better childcare system, paid maternity leave, flexibility. These things exist in other countries. We haven't really incorporated them here. And if I could just say one other thing, what distresses me a little bit is when the conversation becomes only about the high wage earner, the alpha woman, as some people have called it, the person who might become CEO. I think that's really important. I don't want to diminish that. We want our leaders to be a diverse group. I think women have a lot to add in all of those areas, and our companies would be better off, our countries would be better off if we had more women. But what I want to also pay attention to is the middle class family, the lower income family, where the mother doesn't even have the choice of stepping out.
Yeah.
So 25% of American children are living in single-parent households. That's mostly women. And those families are very poor. You know, there's a very high incidence of poverty in single-parent families. So a lot of our children are in that situation, and those mothers have really very few options.
What would make, in your view, the biggest single impact quickly? Mm-hmm. What's the one thing that would be relatively simple to do, or maybe not, but would have a huge impact?
Really high quality childcare, treating it like public education, maybe not the government providing it, maybe just providing financial support and more quality assurance. But the fact that we have so many parents who have no options for what to do with their kids. Childcare costs as much as the first year of college, and yet parents have had no time to save.
That's Karen Kornblow. She's the former U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Karen, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.